You're listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer.
We're on. Good morning, Laguna Beach. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan. And Robert is still on vacation, if you can believe that, somewhere in China, watching the pandas, I believe. Miss Jill, Harvey's in the room with me.
The pandas. Good morning.
Jill's going to help me co-host today's show because, like I said, Robert's out of town. Miss Jill, how you doing? Everything okay?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. You look very nice today, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. I showered.
Yeah, that always helps.
Yeah.
Hey, so just a reminder that Radio Caravan comes on Cox TV 8 p.m. every Saturday, 12 noon every Sunday. And this weekend we have the show with Dr. Lester Lee, a distinguished Orange County medical professional on anti-aging. Dr. Lee has trained and treated Olympic-level athletes and professional athletes. And, of course, as we've said before, his claim to fame is he's been on the Real Housewives of Orange County three times. And that's 8 p.m. Saturday, which is tonight, 12 noon Sunday, which is tomorrow, reaches 250,000 cable subscribers in Orange County and Palos Verdes. Excellent. Hey, we've got an interesting crew going on here today, kind of a different setup for us. We're mixing it up. We've got a great guest coming in, by the way, after the break. You're going to want to stay tuned for author T. Jefferson Parker, who's got a new literary novel coming out. Yeah. Also in the room, we have our intern, Miss Katie Fetters. Let's get on the mic, young lady. Push that over there.
Good morning.
And Robert's out of town, so we've sort of asked you to do the About Town section for the week. You ready to go?
Sure.
Yeah, let's great.
Here's your woman about town.
Lots happening over Orange County this Labor Day weekend.
That sounds good.
I'm just going to touch on a few events. So the Orange International Street Fair is happening in the Orange Circle, that plaza area.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, each street, how they're going to set it up is each street has their own nationality of food, vendors, activities for kids. So that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's actually free admission. So if you want to go check that out, go there this weekend. It's from 10 to 10 p.m. today and tomorrow. Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Good. Yeah.
Are you thinking of going to that?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe?
Maybe tomorrow.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. What else is going on?
We have the Great Labor Day Cruise happening tomorrow at the fairgrounds. And it's not actually a boat cruise or anything. It's a classic model car show.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like old vintage cars. So they're going to have live entertainment and actually a contest for which car is going to win the whole show. And that is $7 for parking, $15 for admission. Kids 12 and under get in free. And all the proceeds go towards the Wounded Warrior Project.
Very nice. Yeah, yeah. Good cause. Love that.
Yeah. And the 5th annual OC Brewhaha is happening.
Brewhaha. B-R-E-W. Haha.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a beer festival. There's going to be
Sounds like a kegger.
So there's going to be 80 plus breweries, 175 craft and import beers. Admissions $20, and all of the proceeds go towards the Fallen Firefighters Relief Fund.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. And didn't you say they have some brew experts coming?
Yeah, they have. What is it called? The world-renowned beer experts.
Now, I was asking this. What makes a beer expert, do you suppose?
Lots of drinking.
Yeah.
Lots of drinking.
Yeah. I guess they know their stuff.
They have to know their hops.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. anything else going on?
Well, happening right in Laguna Beach.
Okay,
it's the last weekend for the Sawdust Festival and the Pageant of the Masters. So
great.
If you want to go, go get some tickets. And I think that there's half-off admission for adults this weekend at the Sawdust Festival after 6 p.m.
That sounds great.
So, yeah, if you haven't gone, go check it out.
Hey, golf clap for Miss Katie Fetters right there. Very nice.
Thank
Off clap.
Yeah, it was quite a clap.
All right, let's push the mic over to Amy here. And guys, we're going to roll the cameras on this one, right? So we're going to get her going. Everybody, here we go. Okay, you're listening to KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This, of course, is Radio Caravan. And we have a new section coming to our show with Miss Amy Adams. And Amy, have we decided what we're going to call this section yet?
Well, I think we're going to call it culture and lifestyle.
Okay.
Because I couldn't narrow it any more than that.
I like that.
But I wanted to keep it broad. I just kind of, I go to a lot of events and I do a lot of things around town. And it's kind of nice to have this platform to share with everyone what's happening. Something I had the pleasure of doing recently was going to Oceana's summer sea party event. Mm. I don't know if anybody knows about that, but this is their seventh year. And they actually host a huge party in Laguna Beach above the high school in a property owned by, I think it's Karen and Bruce Cahill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous property. It's about 3 acres, 18,000 square feet. I heard recently that they built that house to host charity functions.
Mm.
This particular event is one of my favorites because it supports the ocean. And they're actually, I recently learned, the largest international advocacy program around supporting the oceans.
Wow, that's great.
They always have celebrity guests. This year they had Ted Danson, who's been there many, many years. But the honoree of the year was Leonardo DiCaprio, who there were whispers that he flew in on his helicopter. Never mind the CO2 emissions that occurred during right over the ocean.
Did you get to meet him?
Well, you know, he had a lot of security around, and they were very hush-hush about when he got in, and he kind of had the back entrance, even though all the other celebrities were in the forefront. But he, we just met briefly, and he was really nice. It actually kind of seemed a little bit shy, and just very handsome, of course, and he did grant Oceana $3 million this year. So, and this event actually, and I'm not sure if it's the most they've ever made at one of these events, but I think it was somewhere around $1.4 million this year.
That's great.
So it's really remarkable, and I'm super happy for them because I've been going to this event for years, and it's now like this huge to do in Laguna Beach.
We should mention, by the way, that one of the reasons you get to go to some of these events is because you're editor-in-chief of Basque Magazine. And for those who don't know Basque Magazine, can you just give them a sense of...
Sure. Basque Magazine covers Southern California, comes out quarterly. We do monthly iPad editions. We're all over the web. But we cover lifestyle and culture and real estate and fashion, pretty much the whole gamut. Yeah. So I have the honor of attending wonderful events like this all the time.
That sounds great. So. And we're going to do our best, by the way, when we cut this up and edit it for the Cox show, we're going to do our best with B-roll and bringing in photos and images from these events.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they would all love that very much.
Yeah.
So... one of the other things happening in town is Segerstam Center for the Arts just started their 2014-15 Broadway series featuring, they're going to be featuring Once, Pippin, Kinky Boots, a number of wonderful shows. Yes. I actually got to see Once last week. It's actually on Broadway this weekend is the last weekend, I believe. So... if you ever saw the movie Once with Glenn Hansard, I think it is, and he sings that song, Falling Slowly, it was a 2007 flick, but it was amazing. And so if you ever saw that movie or you love the song, you will love this show.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Yeah, it's great.
Didn't Robert interview somebody from Kinky Boots?
Yeah, he did interview somebody from Kinky Boots, mm-hmm. and you're going to... see a little bit of that, I think, in the winter issue of Basque Magazine.
That should be fun.
But he actually just did a whole segment on the Segerstam educational programs, which will appear in fall. So take a look at that.
Great.
And that's about it.
Hey, golf clap for Miss Amy here.
Thank you.
Cyrus in the back with his golf clap. Yeah. Hey, okay. Also, you know, lifestyle coach Jill Harvey, yeah. You've got something for us this morning,
do.
Yes?
I do. Hey, Scott, I have a question for you.
Yeah, please. Off.
You know, standing here next to you,
yeah.
What do we do with our arms?
What do you mean?
Like pockets behind.
I just, whatever.
I think we need coffee mugs that are Radio Caravan coffee.
Oh, that's
mugs,
a good
right?
call. Yeah, yeah, maybe that will right? do that. T-shirts, okay. coffee mugs.
Yeah, hats.
Hats, okay. all of it, yeah.
All right, then I'll be fine.
Okay. All right.
So today we're going to talk about ways to boost your cognitive function.
Ooh.
Fitness and health.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what that means,
well,
but it sounds
so your
good.
Cognitive processes are your mental processes, mm-hmm. how you reason, how you conceive, how you perceive, and how you recognize your intellectual capabilities.
Yeah.
How are those feeling for you today, Scott?
Great.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Ladies, gentlemen, good?
Awesome, so, says April, our engineer.
I love April. Medical studies have shown that a decreased cognitive ability reduces lifespan. So those with Alzheimer's and those with dementia don't live as long as those without the disease.
Hmm.
But the good news is in the past 20 years, studies and research have also shown that the human brain can continue to grow. So if we continue to challenge it, mm-hmm. you know, and engage it, we can grow neurons and synapses and keep that brain firing.
It's like a muscle, right? You work and it grows.
Absolutely a muscle,
that
yeah.
That sounds great.
So we can actually get that rewiring, mm-hmm. always, you know, engaging yeah. that. So these are the following ways, they're fun and exciting, that you can actually challenge your brain.
Okay.
So the first one is exercise. So you're boosting your oxygen flow and your blood flow, and it's getting to a region of the brain called the hippocampus,
right?
And that's for memory.
Yeah.
So we need to be doing that. We need to be exercising. And the studies have also shown that those who are fit have the ability to handle stress better and, learn better things.
Physically fit?
Yeah,
or
physically fit.
That
yeah,
sounds
and they
interesting.
Have a greater capacity for learning as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another are brain games.
What are brain games?
So like your Lumosity.com. You can play your Sudoku. Amy, do you play any?
Well, I just thought of that store, Marbles. Have you been in that store
oh, no.
nearby?
No.
Oh, they have all these cognitive development games.
See? That's exciting.
And they're great for kids. I think that's how they were designed, but they're actually really great for adults.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Perfect. So, and the...
Sorry.
Ooh.
I'm moving her mic, and yeah, I accidentally tucked it. We won't go there.
Well,
but
yeah.
I wanted to make sure that it wasn't blocking. You
yeah,
know?
Now it feels better, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No,
don't,
it's okay.
When
no.
we edit that, let's cut that out, all right?
So we have, you know, your crossword puzzles are great to do. You don't have to edit that out.
Oh, okay, we'll leave
that.
It in. Yeah, might be interesting.
I'm fine with that. So they also have something called cryptograms. Do you guys know what cryptograms are?
No.
So they are games where messages are hidden in code, so you have to decipher the code to get the message, and those are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can also take on new hobbies, like learn a new language, learn to paint, learn a musical instrument. Scott, you play a musical instrument,
I do.
Right?
Yeah.
So we like that. And go back to school. They have both degree and non-degree. I went back to school
yeah.
later in life.
Yeah.
Fantastic. My brain is just firing. It's like, great, yeah. So, you know, you can take... photography classes and art classes there, and then dance classes. Learn to dance. When you dance, it's not just your basic like a bicep curl or your basic fitness routine. You actually have to learn. You have to teach your mind and body to cooperate.
Hmm.
You're learning choreography and sequencing, and you have to put it all together
hmm.
from top to finish. So that's, you know, a fantastic way.
Love
and
that.
Who plays board games here?
I love board games. Backgammon, chess,
yeah,
we all do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And one of my favorite is Rummy Cube. Have you guys ever played Rummy Cube?
Never.
Oh, we're going to have a Radio Caravan board game night. How about that?
Robert and his tequila.
Infused with stem cells now.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we'll light this for T. Jefferson Parker to read.
Oh, good.
And we should read his books. But reading is a wonderful way to escape the ordinary stress of life as well. And you can start book clubs, and you can use it to recall and come up and discuss the chapters and the sections. So
great.
It's a great way to exercise the brain. Going to workshops where you have people who are professionals in their field, and they'll share with you, and it's sometimes interactive.
Love it.
Explore museums and historical sites. Now, when I moved here from Chicago, there aren't many museums, so you have to kind of go San Diego or L.A., yes?
Mm-hmm.
So but do it. Get on the train. Get in a car and go. And practicing mindfulness and reducing your stress. So mindfulness is the ability to do one thing and just focus, give your entire attention to that.
I love that.
Yeah? Can
yeah.
we do that? Yeah?
Mindfulness.
Mindfulness and daydream. You know, when you're cooking, cook. That's a form of meditation, and feed your brain healthy fats, healthy blueberries, avocados. All those fats are good for the brain.
Yeah.
Hydrate. Hydration is important.
Great.
And replace your negative thoughts with positive ones. Negative thoughts are no good.
Yeah.
Bad. And then laughter. Laugh. So see, your brain is healthy. So there you go. We're all going to be healthier and more fit in our brain.
Very nice, young lady. Very nice. Yay. Yeah. I will point out, by the way, I was walking the other day and came across three guys on a basketball court and decided to kind of step in. And I hadn't played basketball in a little while. But I figured I saw their skill level, and I figured I was at that level. So, but I took a charge. And if you know anything about basketball, you just sort of stand there and let your opponent kind of run into you, and you take the foul and you get the ball. And this guy was like twice my size, but I took it because, you know, I don't want to lose.
Of course.
And I hyperextended my wrist. So I either fractured it or twisted it or sprained it.
You have a huge bruise there, too.
Yeah, I got the bruise is just now coming on. But I'll tell you what, bottom line, I won the game.
Oh.
Because I got the ball, hit the last shot, and won the game, Cyrus.
That's what matters.
I felt good about that. You want to see the bruise?
I don't know
if you can even see it from there, can you?
Quite a
All right, there we go. Well, hey, nice job.
Oh, thank you.
You're done?
I'm glad you won. I'm done.
Okay, great. We've also got something quite different going on this morning, Miss April Johnson. Are you on the microphone there?
I am.
Very nice. Robert typically does the Legends of Rock, but he's, as we pointed out, is not here. He's on vacation in China. And April decided to take on this responsibility for us this morning. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Thank you, April.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Legends of Rock.
Rock.
She's a singer-songwriter known for her supple phrasing, feminist stance, and abilities as a slide guitarist whose musical range encompasses blues, folk, rhythm and blues, pop, and country. The one and only Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, I love
her. Raitt is the daughter of Broadway singer John Raitt and pianist Marge Goddard. Coming from a musical family, she was, of course, given her first Stella guitar at the age of 8. Inspired by artists such as Sippy Wallace and Muddy Waters, Raitt quickly established a reputation with her soulful voice. In 1977, she had her first hit titled Sweet Forgiveness.
Sweet forgiveness. How can you go, my babe? I never really knew that I needed you, but you were right.
Great song.
In the 1980s, Raitt played a number of benefits, sharing the stage with the likes of the Doobie Brothers, James Taylor, and Jackson Browne. It wasn't until 1989 that she would make her commercial breakthrough. Working with a new label, Raitt hit her stride, and in 1990, she won 3 Grammy Awards for the song Nick of Time.
A friend of mine, she cries at night, and she calls me on the phone.
Cyrus on drums.
I like it. 3 years later, she struck platinum again with Luck of the Draw.
It's in the luck of the draw, baby.
Luck of the Draw brought even more success, firing 2 hit singles shortly after, one of them being Something to Talk About.
People are talking about people. I hear them whisper.
Amy, backup singer.
You won't believe it. They think we're lovers.
She's got her grip on.
Undercover. I'll just ignore it. But they keep saying.
That other hit single was I Can't Make You Love Me.
I think we had somebody singing this song in the studio not too long ago, didn't we?
You can't make
your heart. Oh, this wasn't it?
What
song did you sing?
I sang. What did I sing?
Yeah, okay.
Not this one.
Okay.
This would have been good.
Here in the dark.
What did I sing?
The other one.
Well,
I will lay down my heart. And I feel the power.
After all the awards and honors and decades of touring, Raitt was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2000. She has since stayed busy touring, appearing on over 100 album projects, and venturing out on her own with a label called Red Wing Records. Her latest album, Slipstream, won the 2013 Grammy Award for Best Americana Album. She says Slipstream is not just a beautiful sounding word, but an indication of her place in the music community. She's in the slipstream of all these styles of music. Our featured artist of the week, Bonnie Raitt.
Beautiful. Nice job, April.
Thank you.
Very nice.
That's dedicated to Robert.
Yeah.
Some big shoes to fill there.
Big shoes to fill. Red Wing Records. That's one of those words, because of my speech impediment, it would come at Red Wing Records.
Yeah.
If I said it fast, that's exactly
how
it
would. Well, lucky I did it. Saved you on that one.
I appreciate it. I just realized if I could get three camera crew women in here, I would have a room full of women.
Wow. Yeah, your wife would probably like that. Let's do that. Good idea.
All right, listen, we're going to go out with a little music. Let's go out with a little Bonnie Raitt, and we're going to take about a 1 minute, maybe 1.5 minute break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to spend the rest of the morning with author T. Jefferson Parker. April, you want to take us out with a Bonnie Raitt tune?
Yep.
Okay.
I told you so.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This, of course, is Radio Caravan, and I'm here with my guest co-hosts at this particular moment, Jill Harvey and, of course, Amy Adams. And I'm honored to introduce our guest this morning, T. Jefferson Parker, the writer, the author, the now novelist writer as well, a novelist. What is that word? Did I get that word right,
that's
Jeff?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. So we're here to talk about his new book, which is a which being sort of hailed as a literary novel, something different for you. But I wanted to go back a ways because I was saying here at the break that you and I have something in common. You and I both worked at the Costa Mesa Daily Pilot.
All right, Pilot. Yeah.
Wow. Way back when. Mm-hmm. And who was your editor back then? Do you remember?
Let's see. My editor was Sandy Joy and we were kind of the entertainment section, culture section. We were not the hard news. We were the entertainment people.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I was an entertainment writer, and it was great because Amy can kind of attest to this as well. You got to go to all those fun events, and you got special privileges and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you go to concerts, and you go to galleries, you go to do all the fun stuff, and you don't even have to pay for it because you're a reporter. It's great.
And did I read you also worked for the Newport Ensign?
Yeah.
Back then it was a weekly or what was it?
It was a weekly back then. The Daily Pilot was like a major metropolitan newspaper compared to the Newport Ensign, which was a little weekly. It was color. It was kind of classy. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I did everything for that paper. As you know, as a young newspaper guy, you go work for a paper and they make you do everything, which is sort of cool. I did cultural stuff. I did fire. I did cops. I got a ton of information from my first novel, Laguna Heat, just by riding along with the cops and talking to them and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. The only thing I didn't do was sports and business, because they always hire specialists to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, got you. We're going to fix your headphones. We'll just be honest here. Fix the headphone set here on your right side. Yep. It's kind of going the other way, so maybe just take it. There you go. That looks better. Yeah, okay. Much better.
Okay. Yeah, much better. Yeah.
Hey, let me give you a little.
So loud.
Yeah, I know. Let me give you a little background here. T. Jefferson Parker, 20 crime novels, including, as he mentioned, Laguna Heat, which we'll talk about in a moment, which was made into a movie starring Harry Hamlin, Jason Robards, and Rip Torn. Mm-hmm. Little Saigon, Silent Joe, and California Girl, for which you won the Edgar Award for Best Mystery Novel. You've been a New York Times best-selling author, and you've got your, like I mentioned earlier, your next literary novel, Full Measure, coming out next month by, is it St. Martin's Press?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a pretty impressive resume as a writer, no?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of work and a lot of books. That's 20 novels, and 21 will be out next month, and that's over... See, the first one was published in 85, so it's been, what, 28 years?
28 years.
Or so. Yeah. Yeah, I've been busy.
And when you wrote Laguna Heat, I mean, you came out of the gate writing Laguna Heat while you were working at a full-time job?
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely. Not a newspaper job, right?
At the beginning it was, yeah. Uh-huh. While I was working at the Ensign and then later the Pilot where you worked, I was working on that book. And then later, after the Pilot, I got a job as a technical editor out in Irvine writing technical manuals for a tank, an anti-aircraft tank for Ford Aerospace. And that's when that book was finally published and sold. I worked on it for 5 years. So I worked all sorts of places while I was working on Laguna Heat. And that was like evenings and weekends and holidays. That's all I did was come home and hit the typewriter again.
And tell us briefly, for those who may not know, a little bit about sort of the scenario of Laguna Heat and how you got inspired to write that.
You know, I was I grew up in Tustin, California, just inland, just a few miles. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of college, I went to UCI for a few years. When I got out of college, I relocated in Laguna Beach, which strangely as it might sound, was exotic to me, having grown up in Tustin. You know, it was only 5 miles away, whatever.
Right.
But it was just different place. And I was so inspired, and I fell in love with Laguna so hard and so heavy when I first moved here, which would have been 1980, that Laguna became a big part of the book. It's kind of a character in the book. It's kind of a, in some ways, it's a mystery, and it's a fast-paced, you know, story and all that kind of jazz. But it's also kind of a very, very evocative kind of love letter to Laguna, because I was so smitten as a young man with the town.
Yeah. How many rejections did you go through before you actually sold Laguna Heat, or was it bought right away?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the funny story, my agent sent the book out to four publishing houses. First submission was going to be five publishing houses. And I got a series of letters over the next few months. Dear Mr. Parker, love the book. Can't publish it. You know, love the characters. Terrible plot. You know? And then the next letter would say, "Dear Mr. Parker, read the book. Can't publish it. Loved it. Great plot. Lousy characters." You know. Then the next letter would contradict it. So I had four different versions. And after about a month or two, I was getting kind of discouraged. And but then the fifth publisher, which was St. Martin's Press, read the book, and my editor called to say that it kept the reader, it kept the editor up until 4 that morning, and he had just finished it, and once he gets a little sleep, he's going to call me and make an offer. So that was pretty cool.
That's very cool,
yeah. Yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen, actually.
And then it got published to rave reviews. Is that fair of me to say?
Yeah, it was splendidly reviewed. It was really well reviewed, and it sold well. You know, it wasn't a blockbuster or anything like that, but mm-hmm. it put me on the map as a writer. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of people read it. It went into 3 printings, and it what it did for me mainly was it set me up for another book. You know, yeah. I was on my way. I turned pro like overnight. I went from being a technical editor to being a mystery writer just on the strength of that book.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people have actually done any technical writing, but it's not the sexiest type of writing you can do, right?
No, it's non-sexual. I'll tell you.
And then when did you get the news that the book, your first book, was actually going to be purchased for a movie, and what was that feeling like for you?
Oh, that was really exciting. You know, it was really exciting. My agent just called and said, you know, guy loved your book, a Hollywood producer by the name of Jay Weston, and he wants to option it, and he's got some serious interest from home box office, HBO. And boom, it happened just like that, you know. Hollywood's funny because when you have something that Hollywood wants, they're very attentive and they're very punctual and they're very polite. And if you have something that they don't really think they want, it can just take years and years to get a phone call returned, you know. So my first experience was all green lights, and it was really great. And as a 31-year-old, I thought, oh, well, it's always like this. You know, my next book's going to be even bigger, you know. It's impossible to have that kind of luck 2 books in a row.
Right.
So anyway, it was fun.
So here's a weird question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But I'm thinking your first book, you said it went through 3 printings?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many did it ultimately end up? I mean, 3 printings is how many books?
Oh, I can tell you. Oh. The all 3 printings were 12,500 copies. So the total hardcover run was 3750, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And your first book, you got an advance, I'm assuming?
I did get an advance. I got a little microscopic advance, and it was enough to pay the bills, my bills, for a couple of 3 months, you know. And I was going broke. Just about the time Laguna Heat came out, and the week that Laguna Heat came out, Ford Aerospace fired me. They fired everybody at the plant. All 1,200 of us lost our jobs.
Wow.
Our project was personally canceled by then Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger. Remember Caspar Weinberger?
Sure, of course.
He nixed our program because it was such a flop. It was such a mess of a program. Anyway, I lost my job. The book got published the same week, and I was going broke. And suddenly, because the book was published in the States, foreign publishers started sending me money for reprint rights. The Japanese paid me a lot of money, more than the Americans did. Italy, France, Germany. I sold it to like 12 different foreign countries.
Wow.
And that got me through easily through the next year or two into the next book.
And I've got to be the royalties as well started to roll in on that particular book as well?
Yeah, 6 months later. Yeah. Yeah, because it sold well and they paid me so little to start with.
Right.
I got royalties immediately.
That's
yeah.
hilarious. And then when you got money for selling the movie, what did that look like? Can you talk about what that looked like? Very first book.
Oh, it was awesome. It was great. I bought my first house, my house in Laguna with that money.
All right.
Put the down payment anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it really set me free in a lot of ways. And it was, you know, super exciting. And they even hired me, after paying me the rights to make a movie, TV movie, they hired me to be a creative consultant, which I found out means don't call us, don't help us, and don't expect to be on the set every day. You know, just like go away.
Yeah.
You know, and so I went away, and it was fine. You know, but the filming here was terrific because they filmed a lot of Laguna Heat in Laguna, mm-hmm. and so I'm in a couple of background scenes and got to watch some of the shooting, and it was really kind of cool to see. You know, here's the real Laguna, here's my Laguna Heat, which is a fictionalized version of the town, and now here's a TV crew shooting it for a movie. So it's like it was kind of surreal almost to see Laguna Beach become on the show. It was neat.
Yeah. You're also a New York Times best-selling author. I'm trying to think. What would it feel like to be a best-selling author, a New York Times best-selling author?
It's cool. It's cool. It's good. And being on the New York Times bestseller list was and still is the gold standard for the commercial side of American publishing or any publishing. That right. list, you know, whether you're on the list or off the list, is like a huge deal mm-hmm. to publishers, to bookstore owners, to people in the industry. You know, the regular people on the street might not know if you were on the New York Times bestseller list or not, and right. they probably don't even care, really. But for authors and publishers and you know, book people, it's a big deal.
I want to get to your next novel. It's a literary novel, as I mentioned before, Full Measure. And I guess my first question for this is, I know we're jumping through all of your other books, but it seemed like the milestone for me when I was kind of researching you was that very first one mm-hmm. that came out. It sort of launched your career as a writer. I mean, anybody who's working for the Costa Mesa Daily Pilot or is working as a tech writer and gets this sort of reception on his first book is incredible, right?
Yeah, not a lot huge of good fortune.
Yeah, really nice. So I'm jumping ahead through all those other books. We can talk about them if you'd like. Is there anything in there you'd like to talk about before we get to the literary novel?
Oh, let's talk literary. Yeah. Okay. Well, those 20 books are 20 mystery thrillers, loosely speaking, you know, mm-hmm. mysteries and or thrillers, however you want to define them.
Right.
And they're all California books. They're all set in Southern California. Several are set in Laguna. Well, I've written about Laguna more than just in Laguna Heat.
Yeah.
And they're crime-based kind of contemporary stories, and they're pretty intense and mm-hmm. they're pretty serious. And I always try to get in kind of larger Orange County like politics and sociology and whatever into the books. I try to make them, you know, believable and kind of based on the general truths that I see around me. So I hope that, you know, X years from now, when people read, you know, Laguna Heat or one of my more recent books, they'll go, okay, that's kind of like, you know, Laguna Beach was a little bit like that then. I hope that there's a little bit of a kernel of social, not commentary so much, but just snapshots, you know, documentation.
So do you do extensive research then before you tackle one of these projects?
Depends. I have, yeah. I mean, one of the beauties of writing about, for instance, Laguna Beach, when you live here, is that you live here, and mm-hmm. there's so much that you learn by osmosis. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't have to really research that much about Laguna because I lived here for all the 5 years that I was writing it. I would see it every day, you know, practically. And so then, you know, to jump ahead a little bit, the last series of thrillers that I wrote focused on a guy who is on loan from the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department to the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, federal guys. And one of their mandates is the control of weapons, guns in the United States and abroad. And I did a lot of research with that because I don't know squat about ATF, yeah. you know. But I do now because I have contacts and I made some friends there and I learned a lot doing that. As a writer, you have to, as you would figure, you have to kind of know what you're talking about, because if you go out there on the page and you've got it wrong, people are going to know really quickly. They're right. just going to put the book down.
You know? So did your training as a journalist help sort of prepare yeah. you in some respects for that sort of work on your novels?
Yeah, I think yeah. so, for sure. For yeah. sure. I mean, you can't be shy and be a journalist. You know, I'm not really outgoing guy by nature, but the first thing you learn when you're a reporter, you remember, you know, the pencil and the pen in hand and the little notebook, the little skinny notebook.
The one that fit in the back pocket?
That fits in your back of your jeans. Yeah, and then you have to be able to go up to some guy and ask him what it felt like to watch his house burn down.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's kind of hard.
Yeah. yeah. You know, people sometimes criticize that, too. Like, why are you asking that person that question?
Hard.
But that's your job. You're there for that. And oftentimes, it's been my experience, when you ask those sorts of questions, they kind of want to vent and get it out anyway. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of gives them an opportunity to do that.
It does. Mm-hmm. You're lucky when that happens.
Yeah.
Then you're just taking notes at that point.
Yeah. yeah. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a one-minute musical break. We're going to come back, and we're going to get into the new book, Full Measure. This is KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is Radio Caravan, and we're speaking with author T. Jefferson Parker. April, take us out with a little music. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to KIX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is Radio Caravan. I'm here, of course, with my co-hosts, Jill Harvey and Amy Adams. And we have in the studio T. Jefferson Parker, the author. We were talking briefly about sort of your past career as a journalist and how you sort of moseyed on into the world of novel writing. But now we wanted to kind of bring it up to date and talk a little bit about your new book, Full Measure. It's being sort of described as a literary novel, and I'm curious what makes a literary novel different from the other books that you've written?
Well, I'll tell you. A literary novel is a catchphrase for any novel, really, that doesn't fall into an easily identified genre, such as science fiction or Western or mystery, thriller, romance, etc. What's left over is literary books. In the case of this book, Full Measure, I moved to Fallbrook 14 years ago. I left Laguna in 2000, and I moved to Fallbrook 14 years ago. And the last few years that I've been there, this story presented itself to me because Fallbrook abuts Camp Pendleton. And I began seeing these young men returning from Afghanistan. This is three, 4 years ago. And they're right there in Fallbrook with me. I see them at the gas station and in the grocery store and whatever, and they're just kind of part of Fallbrook. And so I started talking to them a little bit. You know, it's kind of how you doing, whatever. And I went out to base a few times, and I did some programs, you know, about writing, how to write, and just kind of talking to the guys and interviewing them. And I just became really, really fascinated by what it must be like to be a 22-year-old out of fresh back from bloody combat in Afghanistan and come back to a place like Fallbrook or Laguna or anywhere, America, and try to pick up the pieces and try to do what civilians do, because they haven't been doing anything like civilians do for the past 3 years of their life. And that story evolved into Full Measure, and it never was a mystery or a thriller. You know, there's no body, there's no crime scene, there's nothing really to be solved. There's a lot of mysteries in the book. What's going to happen? Who's going to do what?
Right.
You know, but it's not a crime book. It's not about solving anything. It's about it's a story about brothers. One's a guy who comes back from combat. The other one is kind of a shiftless dreamer who stays at home, and they love each other, but they compete, you know, horrendously, as brothers will do. And together they have to kind of put the family business back together, which is a big avocado ranch. They're big in Fallbrook, where mm-hmm. I live. And that ranch, as the story opens, has been virtually destroyed by wildfire, and what little is left of it is being threatened by drought and debt. And so these two kind of mismatched brothers have to step in and help mom and dad try to get this place on its feet again. And it's just it never was a mystery, so it's a literary novel. It's
I
a
love
story.
That. That's a great explanation. How did you go about writing? How was the writing process then different from, or was it, the other previous writing projects?
Good question. Very good question. You know, one of the things about genre books is that genre books have conventions. There are certain things you can do and not do in a romance, certain things you can do and not do in a Western, science fiction, mystery thriller, whatever. They have their conventions, and sometimes they're negotiable, and sometimes they're loose, and sometimes you can bend them. Mm-hmm. But they're basically kind of have a they're rules, if you will. A literary book doesn't have that. You know, you can go in virtually any direction that you want. There are no conventions really holding you in. Now, that said, is it easier to try to hit your marks writing a genre book, or is it harder? You know, I'm not really sure.
I was going to
ask.
It's
a different process, though. Your question is good. You approach a literary novel differently.
Did it take you any longer to write the book?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote that. Interesting you should ask. I wrote that book in my spare time. I was writing thrillers during the time that I wrote that book. It took about 3 years. It usually takes me 1 year because I'm full-time on the thriller. I'm under contract,
right.
You know. This thing I wrote in my spare time, you know, after writing, I would write that. And it took 3 years. And I did have some months in there where I didn't have to do any other kind of writing. So I had good hours, you know, available. So yeah, it did take a little longer, and I had to kind of feel my way through it. One of the things about a literary book like that is you have so much freedom mm-hmm. from those conventions that it can be scary.
Yeah.
It can be scary. You don't have much to go on. I've got to make you interested in those characters and that story and that language from the get-go, you know, without, you know, I can't have car chases and I can't have crime scenes and I can't have all these conventions that a lot of people are used to and a lot of people like. You're on your own more.
Yeah. I know Amy sort of tackled the book for us, and I'm going to let her in a moment ask you a question. Mm-hmm. You said you're under contract with your publisher. You're required to push out one book every year?
Yeah. I have been under contract since Laguna Heat, almost 30 years. And the basic understanding between me and my publishers was always pretty much that I would complete a book a year, and they would and we would put it right in the contract. You know,
wow.
when you're writing as I was, you know, mystery thrillers, and you have an audience, you're expected to deliver your book at a certain time. Not that you always make it, but you know, usually I would. You know,
deadlines are meant to be broken.
Yeah, and they want to publish it at a certain time. I mean, right. if you read those books you see around you, you know that there's going to be a new T. Jefferson Parker thriller in April, because there's been one in April for the past 10 years. You know,
yeah.
So you get on the schedule, and so I worked around it. I worked in my spare time on this.
That's amazing. And so do you work 5 days a week, 8 days a week, 7 days a week?
I'm a 5 day guy, Monday
eight,
through Friday,
eight
yeah.
to five.
Yeah, pretty much 8 to 5. I get started early. I like being out there early and stuff. I'm still a family man. My son, youngest son, is just turned 16. He's a junior in high school now. Mm-hmm. So our mornings start early. You know, he has to be to school at 8, and
right.
So that means you're getting up at 6:30, 7, whatever. And I waddle out to the to my office, which is a little metal building where I live on my lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 75-foot step commute with my dog and my cup of coffee.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I go into my ugly little metal building, and I sit down in my – it's actually kind of beautiful now. I got it set up just right, and I go to work every day. And there's Saturdays and Sundays I goof off. Yeah.
You know, I teach part-time, and I teach composition mm-hmm. and critical thinking and these sorts of things. And students, one of the first hurdles they have to overcome, at least this is what they tell me, is writer's block. And I told them that when you're hitting deadlines, you don't have time for writer's block.
Yeah.
Do you ever find you have writer's block at all, or is just you've got a deadline to hit and you just pump it out?
Both.
Yeah?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I've never really had writer's block in the sense that I don't have any inspiration or anything to say. My version of writer's block is really trying to figure out what should happen next,
mm-hmm.
because certain things can happen and certain
yeah.
things can't,
yeah.
and everything depends on what's gone before. So for me, it's kind of a puzzle. It's like, and sometimes it'll take me a week or two to really to figure out what the next scene should be, because
mm-hmm.
it's based on what's gone before
mm-hmm.
and it's setting up what goes after, you know. So
so it's not like you know, you have to pump out 250 words every day.
I try to.
Oh, you do? Is
yeah.
that your goal, 250?
No, more than that. My goal is 5 pages a day, which is about, what is it, 300 words on a page?
Yeah.
1,200 words, say?
Yeah.
And if I can get 5 pages in a day, that's 25 at the end of the week. I rarely hit that.
Mm-hmm.
I got 24 pages this week. Yesterday was my Friday. It was Friday. And so I got 24 pages, which to me, I'm really happy with that.
Yeah.
The goal is 25. I almost never make it. 24, I'll take any day. And that's 5 pages a day. And that's my goal.
And the editing process for you? You do your own, you kind of go through that manuscript and you revise and revise and revise constantly?
Yeah.
Do you go back and revise the next day, or do you wait till the entire manuscript is finished before you go back and revise?
I kind of do both.
Okay.
I do both. The deeper I get into a book, the more time I have to spend with it in the morning to kind
mm-hmm.
of figure out where I am. And I always start at page one. So I've read page one of the new book that I'm working on now,
mm-hmm.
you know, 100 times, because
mm-hmm.
I've been writing it for 100 days
yeah.
or whatever, 200. And you know, trying to get in the flavor, get back into the mood. And, you know, I have learned over the ages, you know, the many years, that it's better to figure out, you know, what you're going to do next than just sort of blurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try not to blurt, because
mm-hmm.
blurting takes you down the wrong path, and then you have to unblurt, and you have to throw away pages. And it's good to be kind of composed about it, if
yeah.
you can.
Very nice. Amy, you've been reading the book. Make sure you get close on the mic, by the way.
So just to back up really quick, you said you've written about 20 novels at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so after you wrote each one, did it get a little bit easier? Did you feel like you were maybe on autopilot? You kind of had a routine, or...
Yeah. It gets easier. It gets easier because you get better.
Right.
You know what you're doing. Like if you're a you know, clarinet player, you're just better later, because
right.
you've been doing it for so long, you know. So yeah, it gets easier in that way. But at the same time, each book really is unique. And just because you wrote 10 books earlier, say, or 5 books, or 1 book, or 15 books, doesn't necessarily mean that this next one is going to be any good.
Right. Well, I'm an editor of a magazine, oh. So I feel like every time a new issue comes out, it has to be better than the last one.
There you go.
But with that said, so now you have this new book, which you said took 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Have you started writing another book following that?
Oh, yeah.
Is it also a literary?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going? Is that...
It's going well. It's going well.
You know, it's funny. I mean, these are great questions, by the way, but there are so many writers out there that would love the discipline, I think, that it takes to get up every morning, pump out those 5 pages or those 25 pages, and most of them kind of fall somewhere along the path. Why? Did you just naturally have that discipline, do you think, to stick, the stick-to-itiveness, to continue to... To write?
Yeah, I'm stubborn. I mean, I'm part German. I mean, you know, way back through Grandpa Elmer, you know. I do have good discipline, I think, and I'm kind of goal-oriented and one thing at a time guy. I'm the opposite of ADD. I can do only one thing, you know. And so that's good that's a good characteristic for a writer, I think. And then also, truly, I actually enjoy the work, you know. Yeah. Every day is not a great pleasure, but generally speaking, when a book is going well, you know, it's fun. I like to see what's going to go on in the story, and I like to see what the characters are going to do, and I like to crack off a really good line or a really good paragraph once in a while. I go, yeah, I like that. I'm proud of that.
Yeah, Amy, I'm going to let you ask another question about what you've read, but the book has been described by some as tense and compelling, a great American family novel, sad and depressing, and the director of your publicity called it an East of Eden for a new generation.
Hmm.
I mean, those are pretty good accolades, yes?
Yeah, those are big, strong words. I think the book will leave people emotional. I think, and I value that as a writer and
that's
as a reader.
I would describe it.
I want high emotion.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's not going to be all good emotion, but it's going to be emotion.
What if you sort of?
Well, who do you think your audience is for this book? This is a little different than something that I would normally read. But it is definitely, like you said, very emotional. But who do you think your audience is? Who do you think is going to be most affected by a book like this?
I think, I think those most affected would be families of men and women who have served dangerously and returned. I mean, that's kind of the core of the story, if you will. It's about coming home. In a broader sense, I think for those of us, I'm one of them, who did not serve and have no real firsthand experience at all with that with war, I think there's something in this book for everyone. I think people are going to like it because the emotions are true and they're turned up pretty loud. And I think that there's something in this book for just about everybody in the country. I think it's about the country. One of the beauties that I see in Fallbrook as a little funny little town where I live is, as you've read the first, you know, opening chapter, it's kind of cast as a microcosm of America. You know, the Indians run the smoke shops and the Chinese people in Fallbrook run the Chinese restaurant. The Japanese restaurant is run by Japanese. And it's this kind of multicultural little tiny snapshot of America. And I think because of that, somebody reading from Des Moines or Washington, D.C. or upstate Maine is going to get it.
Right. Do you think you identify with any of the characters? I know you said you didn't serve, but do you feel...
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, Amy. I mean, really, everybody in that book comes right out of my gourd. You know, even Evelyn, the mayor. And I'm clearly not an Evelyn, and I'm clearly not a mayor.
Well, maybe one of the brothers.
Brothers, certainly. I mean, I have a brother, and I understand both of those brothers really well. I mean, these brothers are a lot different than me and my brother, for that matter. I mean, your imagination takes you into wonderful places. But I'm hoping that, you know, the audience for this book, I hope to be wide, and I think women and men equally would like it. It's not kind of canted one gender or another, I hope, I think.
Right.
All right, we got 2 minutes here, and I want to get through. I got a lightning round of questions for you here. So quick answers, if you can give them to me, okay? When you walk around Fallbrook, now that the book is out, do people kind of recognize you as the author of the book that described our community?
Yeah. The book hasn't been published yet, but I expect a lot of that in the next month or so. I'm already fairly well known because I've written about Fallbrook before, and they know me as the local author.
Gotcha. What are you reading these days?
What am I reading these days? Oh, gosh. I'm reading a really cool book called Tracks of Passion, which is a long, long picture book history of skiing in Mammoth, California.
Wow.
Dave McCoy and his story. Fantastic story. Yeah.
That sounds great.
That's wonderful.
Any advice you give to writers who want to achieve the same success as you?
Wow. Read well. Read up. Only read the good guys, because what you read is your vitamin, and that's your nutrition. And read the good stuff and write. There's no substitute for having your rear in the chair and tapping away.
And read T. Jefferson Parker's new novel, Full Measure. Thank you for coming in. Very great interview. Great interview, by the way.
It was fun.
You were a lot of fun. That. Round of applause for him. Golf clap.
Should we announce quickly, though, you're doing your launch in Fallbrook on September 23rd.
Yeah, thank you.
Discussion and book signing at the Fallbrook Branch Library.
At the library.
And then you'll be in Laguna Beach in October.
That's right. I'll be back here in October for that.
Yeah. Jill, nice job. Woo!
Yeah.
Pulled that one out. All right, very nice. You're listening to KX 93.5. I'm Scott Hayes. This is Radio Caravan. We're out of here. April, take us away with a little music, please.
You've been listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer.